The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
We're very happy to welcome back to the show, in studio with us, Leland Miller, China Beige Book International President. And we want to talk about this exports report, the quality of Chinese data, and more broadly, where the Chinese economy is now. Welcome.
Thank you.
But I still have to ask you, I know I did in the break, but for our listeners as well, because I think about the budget going back and forth. I think of the fact that the Chinese own so many of our bonds. So they're maybe, are they watching the Fed's quantitative easing? Or do they, are they concerned about the budget getting bigger or smaller, what that does to bond supply? Or do they just sit back and say, you know, those crazy Americans, they're going to do what they're going to do, and we're going to keep buying their bonds?
Well, they're watching QE for sure. It's a perfect scapegoat for what they're doing, which is their own kind of QE. I mean, M2 is just spiraling through the roof since 2005 in China. So they're watching QE. As far as the politics of the situation, I don't think they understand it more than the average American does. They're pretty baffled.
Well, given how the renminbi is tied so closely to the U.S. dollar, why doesn't our interest rates and our interest rate moves affect them more?
Well, they have controlled interest rates over there. You know, the shadow finance is becoming a huge part of the economy, so less so and probably less so over time. But right now, the Chinese essentially control their system. There's some flexibility in their bands, but right now it's a controlled economy. And as much call for liberalization as there is, it still is a controlled economy.
Nevertheless, what the Fed does very much affects them, right? And in these data that we're talking about, the export-import data, we found that exports to America surged almost 11%, 10.8%.
That's right. I mean, certainly if everyone else is printing money, the Japanese and the Americans, money is going to go into China to try to get a better return. So you're going to see some of that. But, you know, the export data is wrong beyond just a monthly glimpse. People look at the January-February data, which is very deceptive because of Chinese New Year. And then when you see the February to March data, there's always a weird jump, even if you're looking at the actual accurate data. But if you look right now at what the Chinese are reporting their exports are to Hong Kong versus what the Hong Kong government is reporting they're importing from China, it's just way off.
Well, give us the exact number, because I'm looking at our Bloomberg report, but you know this stuff inside out. Share with our listeners what these numbers are.
No, let me see. I mean, I want to it was almost double, I think.
The percentage jump in exports to Hong Kong was 92.9%, the most in 18 years. And even the government's saying now they're going to look to see if these figures were inflated, and there's a reason why they might be inflating figures, some of these Chinese exporters, correct?
Well, they want to, you know, they could take advantage of tax rebates. They also want to try to get money out of the country for different reasons. If they're buying properties abroad, you know, there's capital controls. How do you get money out to buy some of these properties? There's a lot of reasons the Chinese have for getting money out of the country. It's just right now people are looking at it closer than ever because the data is just so beyond absurd.
How do they collect this data?
Well, you know, on the Chinese side, the government comes out with a number that they collect from companies. Hong Kong Customs also publishes a number. And, you know, it's interesting because right now you've got a lot of people standing up front saying the export data is wrong, but don't worry about the other data. I mean, I think Goldman sent a note out to its clients saying, you know, don't believe the trade data, but this shouldn't cause any skepticism on the other data. But it's a little bit interesting because you have some visibility on the trade data and you have very little visibility on the other data, and you'd think there'd be even more skepticism when there's less transparency.
What's the incentive for China to mess with this data? Is it for the local businesses themselves? Is it for us in America? I mean, who is it for?
Well, you know, messing with data has been a Chinese pastime
data, though, as you mentioned, some of the others are much more believable, much more.
Right. Well, this isn't necessarily even the Chinese government manipulating the figures for some sort of domestic political process. They're recording figures that are reported to them by companies. But as long as you have capital controls, you'll have companies incentivized to try to evade those capital controls. So, you know, this isn't something where we're looking at the data and say, you know, those evil despots in Beijing are manipulating the numbers for this. This is simply companies doing everything they can to try to get money out of China and take advantage of regulatory things like tax rebates.
So there's this cloud around Chinese data, more in the spotlight now. Does it put any more pressure on the Chinese government to improve their data? Again, you're the China Beige Book. You guys, one of the reasons you started is because people wanted a better picture of what's going on in the Chinese economy. And you are you're in China, you're very close to all this stuff. What's your sense of what this means for the government? Will they respond?
Well, they will, and they have been. One of the things that gets lost in our message along the way is that the Chinese government has actually been getting better and better and better at this over time. You know, they're trying to cut out the middlemen, and they're trying to staff the National Bureau of Statistics better. They're resourcing these departments with more funds to be able to do a better job. So they are working on better data collection. The problem is there's a lot of forces working against them right now, and you still don't have accurate data coming out of China.
Really quickly, and we'll come back to this, the fact that there's an agreement with Australia now, currencies-wise, does that affect things?
Not really. I mean, you know, people look at this as the first step towards internationalization of the currency or, you know, lifting of the capital controls. These are baby steps. You know, they've been doing little things like this with countries from Nigeria to Iran to others. You know, it's a good thing for the Chinese, but it puts more pressure on them to be able to loosen up their system, and that causes some domestic problems.
Let's just kind of step back. We want to get to North Korea as well, but the Chinese economy, you know, people are still sort of divided, I think. Some people still have it as a concern. Others seem to say, well, it's not going to grow as rapidly as it did, but China is not a big worry in Asia.
Well, I think back in December, people were really excited about Chinese growth. Pretty much everybody was optimistic. You saw the fiscal stimulus come in. You see the new leadership in place. And everybody was really buoyant on China. And then the January, February data came in and has made people much more hesitant. Now, January, February data is Chinese New Year's data. You have to always take that with a grain of salt or throw it away. We throw it away. Others don't. But, you know, it's influenced people to think that things are a lot worse off than they actually are. Our first quarter results, you know, our report came out last night. Our first quarter results are much stronger than what people are talking about. We're seeing very strong growth, retail, services, real estate, and solid growth in both manufacturing and mining. So we're not seeing these significant problems that everyone's talking about. That doesn't mean our medium-term forecast doesn't have some big question marks. But for first quarter, we're seeing strong growth.
Now, has this anything to do with the new leadership? I mean, can the new leadership direct the economy that quickly, or does it take a year?
Sure. I mean, one of the things that our data showed back in 2012 and that we're very clear about is that monetary policy as a stimulus mechanism doesn't work anymore. But fiscal stimulus sure does. And what the Chinese did after the new leadership transition was dump an enormous amount of fiscal stimulus into the economy. And you're seeing that pay off. And it's creating growth, not just in manufacturing, which is what people usually associate with fiscal stimulus spending, but also in services and other aspects of the economy. So you're seeing strong growth. It absolutely has the government hand on it. And it's the new leadership trying to send a message.
Being what? That we're going to make sure this happens?
Yeah, yeah, that trust us. We'll get you the growth you need. We're in charge.
Well, and don't they have to? I mean, Europe isn't going to buy anywhere near as many Chinese exports. I mean, we're holding up reasonably well. But it seems, isn't the handwriting sort of on the wall for the Chinese that given where the world economy is, given debt overhanging all these big parts of the world, that they got to figure out how to generate it more internally?
Absolutely. I mean, that's the key question. And that's why this whole debate about exports and imports, it's important. The data is important. But what is not going to happen, no matter what the numbers say, is that China is going to return to an export growth economy. It's either domestic consumption will increase and lead the economy forward, or it won't, and there'll be a problem. But you're not going to have exports save the economy like it had for decades.
Now, how much of this is all energy related?
Well, part of it. I mean, looking outward, the Chinese are very interested in energy deals. So a lot of the foreign direct investment right now is energy assets. They're running into problems because a lot of governments, including the United States, consider energy part of the national security structure. And so they're not really happy with the Chinese gobbling up assets all over the place. But the Chinese are definitely looking to acquire energy assets. It's a big part of their strategy.
What about North Korea, South Korea, China? I have a hard time taking North Korea's saber rattling seriously because they seem to do this periodically. And yet South Korea is bracing for a very high chance of a North Korean missile test. The Japanese are getting ready to erect some defenses. So if they're taking it seriously, I guess I should take it seriously and try to wrap my head around it. What are they doing and why?
Well, in the past, people figured out the way Kim Il-sung operated. And then they figured out how Kim Jong-il operated. And they would create a crisis, and then they would get some sort of aid in return, and then they would calm down. And it wasn't always the same, but it was a cycle that was identifiable. Nobody knows how the new 29-year-old leader, Kim Jong-un, actually operates. Why is he doing any of this? This seems like a very serious crisis compared to what's happened in the past. And, you know, he's being unnecessarily provocative in about just about every way he can. So right now, you know, there's a lot of belief that maybe he's switching up personnel. He's using this as a way to sort of turn over the new regime in North Korea. But nobody has a clue. And there very likely will be a missile launched sometime in the next couple days.
What is China thinking about this? Like, China can't alienate the United States. It also doesn't particularly want to alienate the Koreas.
Well, this is, you know, it's a terrible situation. It's why the Chinese never really do anything decisive, because they don't know what they should do. You know, on the one hand, North Korea causing a problem and people getting mad at China for not containing them is a problem for China. On the other hand, the worst case scenario, other than some sort of massive war, would be for the North Korean regime to be turned over and for a unified Korea with Korean troops and U.S. troops and everyone on China's border and refugee flows just overflowing the border into China. So they're looking at a lot of bad case situations, and the Chinese reaction to that often is to just toe the middle line and be very quiet about it.
And then behind the scenes lean on North Korea? Do they have any special links that we don't see publicly but are there, and, you know, do it subtly so North Korea can keep holding, you know, its face, right?
We had
save
some
face,
of that at the weekend already,
yeah.
Didn't we?
Right. I mean, they do that. And there was a lot of speculation right when Kim Jong-un took control of the government that Jangsong Tech, which is his Kim Jong-il's brother's sister's husband, had a very close relationship with China, that he would see sort of be this regent that would allow the Chinese government to use North Korea as, if not a puppet, then to control them very closely. And what we're seeing is that's not happening. The Chinese react in various ways. They cut off rice shipments at the border, make it more difficult, and they scold North Korea publicly right now. But they haven't taken any of the really big steps. I think they're part of the reasons they're scared to.
Since we're talking about geopolitical, you know, landscape, what about the standoff with Japan? You know, I mean, that's not going away. And
we've got islands, and now we've got currency wars too, right?
Well,
with this
exactly.
Aggressive Bank of Japan easing.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is, if, you know, it spreads from this island, the next one, what is Okinawa?
Well, this is also entering the Chinese thinking. What's happening with China and Japan is it seems like it's calming down, but there's some significant tensions around the Senkakus. And one of the problems China has in letting North Korea become so reckless is that it's only incentivizing the Japanese to go get their own deterrence, to go get their own nuclear forces, and to become more aggressive themselves. So if they misplay this, you could have a Japanese reaction, and you already know that Abe wants this. He's already going to be pushing for significant pushback against the pacifist constitution. He wants to arm Japan more significantly, and this is playing right into his hands.
Are you saying this would be an excuse for him to arm Japan, or that he would need to arm Japan?
Both. I mean, he is going to arm Japan. It's happening. It's been happening. The question is whether the Chinese, through North Korea, are going to give him such a great reason for doing this that it's going to become even easier to push through politically.
And again, do the currency wars matter in any big way to China, this aggressive monetary easing? Does this – it's a totally different kind of step, but what difference does it make? How big of a factor?
It makes a big – it is a big deal. They're a little bit hypocritical because the Chinese, of course, are doing the same thing. But,
right.
You're going to see a lot of those funds re-divert and go into China, and it's going to cause inflation. One of the things that we saw this week was that, you know, the Chinese announced CPI was much lower at 2.1%. Now, this is not what we're seeing on the ground with the China Beige Book. We're seeing significant inflation. It's not yet scary, but it's a significant problem.
In the regions.
Indeed. Leland Miller, thank you so much.
The Hayes Advantage, weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, in New York on Bloomberg 1130, in Boston on 1200 a.m. and 94.5 FM HD2, or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2013 Bloomberg LP.